Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's up, Ray?
I'm just laughing. So, like, you're asking about a movie, and I'm like, God, I hope you guys finish off whatever you're looking for, because I haven't seen a movie in, like, 53 years. And so I'm like, the only hope is Noodles. Yeah. And then Noodles has a friend of a friend from a goth rock bang your head band. You get the most eclectic group of friends, like, in the history of friends.
It is very unique sometimes, I will admit that. It just, I joke around, and I'm not lying, I feel like I'm kind of like the Forrest Gump of life. I'm always in the background of some, like, weird things that happen. And I've come across or been able, I guess through hockey and through our social connect people.
Oh,
and
yep.
You know, yeah, I guess that's how it works.
But I just laugh, like, I don't know, like, hey, did you meet anybody like this?
No, I know everyone through Noodles. I live vicariously through him.
I don't know about that.
I don't know anybody interesting. Nobody.
No, run, Forrest, run.
Yeah,
exactly.
Honestly, Noodles, I've been saying that. We've known each other for almost 8 years. You are the Forrest Gump of the hockey world.
Yeah.
Anything that happened of, you know, significance, you were there somehow.
Yeah, like just weird things. You meet somebody like, oh, yeah, I know that person or whatever. But I think it's because you just happen to have a social network that reaches a little farther. Like, I was excited. You talk about country music. I went to Strutty's Roast last year. Brett Kissel was there. And I'd never met the guy. He's a good up-and-coming singer. He just won Album of the Year the other day.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. At the Junos, right?
Yeah. And you know, I sent him a note. Like, he's a really nice guy. But it's kind of neat. He's a big hockey fan, and he's a goalie. His dad was a goalie. So, like, you kind of have a little bit of crossover. You know, Gord Downie was the same way. I didn't track the hip as tight as I wanted to now looking back on it, but... You know, Gord Downie was a goaltender, and he was kind of always around, and, you know, you end up crossing paths with him. You wouldn't call him a tight friend, but it's somebody you'd had a conversation
with.
He
would be aware of who you are.
Absolutely, and vice versa. Obviously, he was such a big star.
Ray, we were talking some golf in the first hour, and we were talking about the worst type of golfer, like, you know, found it in the woods guy, and... rage guy and different kind of guys, and our host here supports fluff it in the rough guy.
The guys that roll the ball over no matter where it is. Like, seriously, why don't you just put it on a tee?
He defends it, though. He's like, that. As soon as I said fluff guy and I showed some disappointment, he's like, no. I support fluff it in the rough guy.
Well, I have a confession to make. I have been that guy from time to time.
I've played with you. I see it. It's like a 5-wood fluff in the rough from 185. And you love
it. I love the guys, too, though, that it's the middle of July and they'll go, they're in the fairway and they'll say, summer rules.
Well,
it's July. What the hell are you going to do? He's like, well, I'm kind of in the side of this divot. Bad break.
Isn't,
man,
summer rules, you leave it as lies? I thought winter rules is where you could move it around in the fairway only.
No, but that's what he's at. He's hoping you say, oh, no, it's not summer rules. So then he can, I don't know, throw it towards the green. You're like,
I don't care how much money you're playing for. I think if you're in the fairway, you should be able to pull your ball out of a divot. Amateurs.
Oh, look at you. So you're allowed to do that now. You're allowed to take your ball out of the divot, but fluffing it up in the rough is
because you
disgusting.
Hit the fairway. You hit the fairway. Why should you be penalized for being in a divot?
Well, the rules are the rules. Why should I be penalized for being in the rough?
Because you're crappy. It is a junky rule. I mean, it is the dumbest rule in golf, I think. Well, there's lots of dumb rules in golf, but you hit it right down the middle. You get up there, and because some guy in front of you is a lazy slob and never replaced the divot, you're in a cavern.
Yeah, do you remember Payne Stewart at the U.S. Open? Just striked it down the middle in a divot.
Yeah. Well, listen, I would support the rule change.
I like when you see a guy that just cannot chip the golf ball, and he's like 10 feet in the rough off the green, and he wheels out the putter. You know that guy. He puts that thing through 10 feet of rough because he cannot put that wedge in his hand.
The yippy guy is awesome. You know, the chip, the putt, the putt yip guy that as he putts it, as it's just going by the hole, but he's hit it way too hard, he just scoops it back up. Yeah, next one's good.
Yeah, love
that guy.
What do
you mean? You just hit that thing 5 feet by.
I'll tell you what, there's people that have phobias about being in a bunker, and they can't get out if their life depended on it. They're scared to hell of a bunker.
I'm glad that I don't have that, because that is, then it makes it funny to me. The guys you play with, they're just, you know, they're like, they're not in there.
It's 100% skull. Like 100% skull.
See, but I look at this, like, Ray, I know you're a pretty honest guy, and you would lay it on the line with somebody that you were playing with that annoyed you. So I don't know if there was somebody trying to tell you how to swing, or if there was somebody playing
music. Oh, I don't like that. Like, I do not like that.
To me, I guarantee you there's at least five things that you would not put up with on the course.
Well, the fact that you don't play and you just drive around, that would be one of them. What the hell are you doing, Noodle?
That's me. At one point, I had two cell phones. I don't know why. I think I had an American and a Canadian one. But I remember riding around on Pebble Beach and burning both of those phones out, the batteries, because I just sat in the cart and texted and called people. I watched Jeff Nielsen, a guy I played with in Minnesota, shoot par and dominate. The guy was such a ridiculous golfer. He went on a golf scholarship, I think, to the University of Minnesota, golf and hockey, and he chose hockey to become a fourth line winger. When he would tell me he would rinse guys on the tour.
But on tour, because that's
the
thing.
Said, like, when he played college, he's like, that guy on the tour, I used to kick his ass in college all the time. Mm. Like he was a legit golfer. Like, but he loved hockey, and he had a decent career, but nothing compared to, I imagine, what he could have done on the golf course.
Yeah.
Scary.
Well, it's a mental game, man. Like, that's the thing. You get your card and you got to start. It's a grind every week. You know, you focus on the top 25 players in the world and they're making money and all that.
Yeah.
Go look at the guy who's just holding on for his life.
Living out of his car.
Yeah. Just praying to make a cut so he can get some cash. Anyway, the Leafs, you know, lost last night. No moral victories, clearly. But you were there. You were in the arena. Any positives you would take from last night that you hope they can apply tonight in Buffalo?
I liked a lot of their game last night. I mean, outside of the two real blunders, one by Muzzin in the first period, and then I'm not real sure what Ozhiganov was looking at in the third. Outside of that, I only really recall a couple of chances. I thought Craig Smith had a couple early, and then Johansson had the shorthanded chance. I thought they played really well. I thought they checked well. The second period, they held Nashville to two shots. That's pretty good stuff. I liked a lot of their game. I guess I didn't like that they weren't able to generate very much. But that's a really good defense and a really mobile defense. And Kapanen's first game back, I didn't think he was particularly noticeable. I mean, Marlowe and Kadri were like, they were beyond silent last night, and so that takes one line out of the mix, right? I thought Matthews was really good. He looked like he had his legs last night.
That was one of the best games I've seen him play.
Yeah. Didn't you think he was going to score somewhere in there? You're like, man, he's the way it's going tonight, and it just didn't happen for him. But I would think they're probably better off if they can play like that, because they're going to have enough skill to score some. The question now has to be or is asked is, okay, they played like that last night. If they win 6-5 tonight, that doesn't really accomplish much.
Yeah.
No, they've got to carry something over, like a semblance of a system and a commitment to playing defense.
But you don't want it to be a trade-off. And I think sometimes maybe in these high-scoring players' minds that they're trading something off instead of implementing it into their game, if that makes sense.
100% right, man. I always felt like when they would tell me, you know, you got to concentrate more on defense and you got to play better without the puck, I felt they were telling me, that goes in front of the offense.
Right.
And I did, and so pretty soon you feel like you're just chipping the puck out to center ice. So the sell job has to be, I think anyway, that was really good, but we need to score too. So we can do both. So let's get at it tonight. You know, like don't give it up. Don't give it all up and get nothing back.
Yeah, I think it's a give and take. And Ray, actually, I wanted to bring up, I thought your call on the second goal against was brilliant, where you said, unless the guy behind the net, was it Granlund, was going to, if they had to turn the net around, he wasn't dangerous.
Yeah, it's the only way that guy was dangerous. He's standing right behind the net. Nozhiganov's going to go jump the pass. And
yeah.
Really good play. I think it was Ellis, wasn't it?
Yeah, it
that
was.
That made the pass.
Yeah.
I was like, man, he looked up, and as soon as Nozhiganov went one way, he went right across, and Simmons scored. But I often wonder with the D, like, I know they want to jump the play as quick as they can, but say it goes behind the net and you don't get there fast enough. Like, so what? You can't score from there. You can barely make a play from there.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Now, they got to get Hall, but like, I thought Hall played actually okay last night.
Yep.
I thought he skated better. I liked him a heck of a lot more than Nozhiganov, that mistake aside. But so just think, did you ever imagine this late in the season you'd be going, man, I hope Marincin's back?
Well, that's exactly what's happening, and I don't think he will be tonight. I don't get the impression like he's going to be healthy enough to play. So, you know, if he does, then he's going in. But if not, you've got Nozhiganov, who, like last night, they were kind of moving the pairings around a little bit. Nozhiganov got a couple shifts with Riley, and Hainsey was moving around a bit, which I guess you have to do that, right? You've got to you want Morgan Riley on the ice as much as possible.
Well, I think more than anything, you want Riley out there, but what they weren't going to have was Nozhiganov and Hall out there ever together.
No.
And so that meant, you know, you had to bounce guys all over the place and led to some odd-looking pairings. But I thought at least, like, you know, what I'd heard about Hall was that he skates the puck well, he'll carry it into the zone. He hasn't done that, and probably because he's terrified, right? Like, he doesn't want to screw up again, and you screw up, you don't get back in the lineup. So, you know, he's -4 in Ottawa. To me, that looked like a game, like, to him, where, man, I'd been trying to do it the other way, and I did nothing but fish pucks out of the net.
Yeah.
I need to do a little bit more of what I do. And I thought he was good last night.
Does tonight feel like a must win? Like, do they have to win it? Like, the Habs are still 8 points back, but now Boston's 6 up. They're gone. You know, there's panic in the city, I can tell you that. And if they lose tonight to Buffalo, people are going to be freaking out. But in the room, do you feel like they think they have to win tonight?
No, I don't think so. I don't. I don't feel like they would even be threatened yet. The way it's a must-win to me, or closer to that, is that they don't have a lot of time to put together a good run. And they're certainly one game that they played pretty well, but they didn't score. That's not the start of the run. So I don't think they're worried about Montreal or losing their place or anything. You know, they might look at it and go, man, home ice is gone. But I can't imagine they're in any panic yet.
Do you think there's any added pressure on a guy like Garrett Sparks?
Oh, I do.
Yeah, O thought that too.
Like,
big time.
That was a wrong time to have an opinion, and certainly one like that. I mean, you can go ahead and have the opinion. Well, Noodles, you were the backup goalie. How often would you have an opinion like that, in particular when you just fish 6 out from behind you?
Well, never. And even if I did, if I was later in my career and I felt like I was that respect level in the room and I was one of the leaders, I would have never said it in public. If we were going around the room afterwards and having maybe a closed-door meeting and it comes to you and you've got something to say, yeah, I think you could have the floor, absolutely, because I think guys have voices in the room. And I believe within the room there is a pecking order, but guys still are respected enough to have a voice. I felt the timing of it to take that public, you know, it wasn't great. And it shines a light on yourself. And Babcock even talked to it in his media today. He spoke to it saying, hey, you know, you gotta kind of stop pucks. I think he was very diplomatic about it, but he said, goalie's got to stop pucks.
What, do you want to hear that clip?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Here's what Babcock said about Sparks and the pressure on him tonight.
I would think so.
What are you expecting from him?
I expect him to play well. I just know in life, when you own everything yourself. So the way I look at it, when the team isn't playing well, it's my fault. And it's my fault. You know, if I take responsibility for that, I can fix that. If you're the goalie and you play and your team doesn't win, if you own it, you can fix that. Anytime you're looking for any other help in life, it doesn't usually go your way. So just own what you do and play as hard as you can tonight. We're going to play hard for Sparky, and he's going to play well.
I think that's reasonable.
I got to say, I do love the philosophical Babs.
Well, we talked
it's
about this.
It's my favorite, honestly. It's my favorite.
Right.
Because there's some Saskatchewan in there and, you know, like some farmer wisdom and all that stuff. I kind of do like it, actually.
Well, I'm with it, too, but I find that it can be somewhat inconsistent, where with Garrett Sparks, hey, no excuses. And if you start looking for them, they're not going to come. But then when you talk about not having right-shot defensemen, hey, what do you want out of me? You know, hey, what are you going to do? You know, like, because there's been a lot, there's been some deflecting, as we've been talking about throughout the week.
Yeah.
So, you know, which one is it? Is it no excuses, or are there some excuses?
Well, you know what? I will say that I've done 3 radio hits today, and in the other cities, the discussion after a few questions on the local team went back to Babcock and Dubas and whether we're on the same page. And, like, pretty soon by making comments that kind of crisscross with each other, a dust storm gets kicked up around your team. And that's what it kind of felt like to me today. I was like, ooh, some other people are noticing it, not just us guys that are talking about it every day.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, right, because of the dynamics. You've got Mike Babcock's been a head coach for 20 years. He's Team Canada's head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Dubas was in the OHL 4 years ago and has never been a GM and is 33 years old.
Yeah.
Right? It sets up for some friction, at least sensing that there could be on the outside. And Babcock has a mic in front of him every day, which, to be fair to him, isn't always easy. And sometimes you can say something where maybe you'd like to take it back. Kyle Dubas doesn't have to ever talk to the media. He will at times, but not every single day. You know, like on Saturday night, someone got a video shot of him rubbing his eyes.
Yeah, and that was a meme.
And that became, well, what does this mean? We have to interpret that. Babcock every single day has to speak.
It was when the fifth goal went in, he was like, damn, this is a long night. That's what it meant.
Yeah. Right. We suck tonight.
Yeah.
Like, you're allowed to think that. But I just find, like, when Dubas retweeted that thing yesterday from the Houston Rockets GM, you know, about the hard way and the easy way, and then that came on the heels of we need more depth and, you know, you got to keep getting better and better players. It kind of kicked up a little dust, and it doesn't matter particularly if it's just in the in-house, but you know how momentum starts, and pretty soon it gets bigger than it needs to be, or it spreads around the different places and different people are talking about it. That was my sense today.
Well, speaking of getting a streak going or something starting to stumble and, you know, a snowball developing here, down in Pittsburgh, Phil Kessel made history last night.
Most amount of games, right?
He has the Ironman streak for that team.
320.
320 straight games as a Pittsburgh Penguin. That's incredible for Phil, but that doesn't look good on the Penguins. They've been around for a long time. You're telling me no one else could play 321 straight games or more?
Don't kid yourself with those games played streaks. Like, maybe there was a bunch of times you could have gone on the corner and you just said, you know what I mean?
I'm sure there's some times where, you know, a game played for him where he took his jersey off and there wasn't any sweat there. You know,
like, well, don't be too fascinated. Impressive, but, like, don't be too overly excited about it.
I'm not bashing Phil here. I'm saying I was surprised.
No, it's great and everything, but just don't be too thrilled or excited about those types of streaks.
The old you get to show up streak.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at Phil, though, how's he going to get hurt?
Yeah, you're right. Like he,
I don't know, his style is it, and the, you know, the way he's built, like he's not like he's, I don't know, it just doesn't look like to me that he's going to get hurt.
Well, you'd think he'd take a puck off the foot at some point, or
oh no, he's better than that.
He flies by those opportunities, huh?
I you know what though,
he's not wearing shot blockers.
You're right. I think it does speak to. I think he is an outlier of an athlete, because we've all said, you know what, the way the body is constructed, the way he plays, like, you know, when it drops off, it's going to hit a wall. This is a guy, and we've even heard that from high-end physical fitness people saying, like, this guy's tests are off the charts, but when he hits the wall, when Father Time catches up to them, that's it. Like, it's going to be...
How old is he now?
Phil's in his 30s
31?
Now. Yeah, he's...
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
Lots of guys in way better looking shape than him. hit the wall at 31.
Yeah, he's 31, born October 2nd, so he'll be...
He's had a great year.
Yeah.
A really productive year.
But he's a consistent player, but he is a guy that, you know, I think he's perfectly slotted where he is in Pittsburgh, a secondary player who's a high-end skilled guy who can give you power play minutes, you know, but they shield him, and so he should be. And here in Toronto, that core didn't work because he was a front and center guy, and they relied on him night in and night out. And quite honestly, it wasn't Phil's fault. The depth around him didn't help. But in Pittsburgh, where you've got arguably two top 100 players of all time, I think we all agree Malkin's a 100, yep. Right?
Absolutely, he should have been in there a couple years ago. There.
Okay, so you've got Crosby, Malkin, and then Phil, and then other players in that mix. Like, Phil's perfectly slotted. I like him. I know him personally a little bit. I like him as a person. I think he's very well liked in the dressing room, but it didn't work out here in Toronto, unfortunately. Although he was a consistent player here. It's just they didn't have any talent around him.
The bottom line was they were not good enough.
Exactly.
When he was there. I mean, whether he could have been better or not, you know, yes, he could have been for sure, but, man, they weren't any good.
Correct.
And so that was not... No, that was only going to be so good.
Yeah.
Well, and you get to watch basically two teams in the same mold tonight, I believe. Vancouver-Ottawa should be
Vancouver-Ottawa, yeah. I just got back home, and Vancouver-Ottawa tonight. Mark Crawford makes his return to Vancouver, and he had a great line today. I just read it. He said, you know, like, in Vancouver, he's always referred to as his nickname is Crow, and they call him Summer Crow when he's really nice and really patient, and Winter Crow when he's a raving lunatic when he's behind the bench.
Now he's Spring Crow?
Yeah, he's Spring Crow. He said that's where he's at now. I'm like, that's pretty good, actually.
That's a very good spot to be.
I think he has mellowed a little bit in his, I wouldn't say older age, his veteran status.
Well, we'll catch you tonight, and we'll break it down tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Talk to you then, boys, later on.
There's Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline.